Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Dan McNeil. Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go.
Afternoons on the Score.
It doesn't get much better than this.
Oh, this is the pinnacle, man. This is it. This is the Rolling Stones in 2019.
I have a question for you, by the way. Rock and roll etiquette.
There is some etiquette, and there's a way of doing it where you're celebrating the game.
You took a picture with that gentleman over there wearing the Beatles hoodie. I always thought that like the Beatles and the Stones were kind of
There's a rivalry. There's sort of a rivalry.
Let me ask you guys. Beatles, Stones, on a count of three. One, two, three.
All in.
Look, yes.
Is that the same as wearing a Sox jersey to Wrigley when the White Sox aren't playing?
Well, you know, if you wear a Sox jersey to Wrigley Field, Cubs fans say, well, you know, you don't really belong here, but let me put my arm around you because you're not as privileged as I am. And that's how I feel at a Stones concert to anybody wearing Beatles garb.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, congratulations on being an enormous fan of the greatest pop band in rock and roll history.
God needs the devil. The Beatles needed the Rolling Stones. Even Diane Sawyer needed Katie Couric.
He's got a Stone shirt underneath. He says he's just cold. But, sir, you are outnumbered in a very significant way.
I don't know if you're aware of this, Gutter, but there actually was music recorded before 1989. What is this? You're going to wear this to the show. You're going to wear the shirt of the band you're going to go see. Don't be that guy.
We talking Stones? We done.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
Neil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Yeah, it's McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Tanny's here, Shep's here, Mac dealing with some car issues, may or may not be here. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll be all right either way. 100%. I think we'll be just fine. Otter experiences to discuss, Cubs weekend to discuss. Plenty to discuss. John Jay has been found. He's alive and well. Oh my goodness, the sun's going to come out in Chicago after all.
That is really exciting. John Jay is here to pair with Yonder Alonso and just take all of the derision of Sox fans. This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com. Top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season and single game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. I heard you and Anthony Herron over the weekend. You guys sounded really good.
Thank you.
Did you not? You had no interest in seeing the Stones? I heard you guys doing some sports Stones comparisons.
I had interest in seeing them because his comparison was, and I think it's from at least the details that you shared a little bit there, of kind of how when you listen, yeah, okay, you can tell that's the Stones. Yeah, these are the Rolling freaking Stones, and they've been doing this for 50 years, and holy cow, it's incredible the fact that they're still going. But that I kind of compared it to when I paid out of my rear end to go see Kobe Bryant one of his last years, when he was one of his last trips through Chicago, and I think he went like 8 of 24 or 8 of 25 from the field. The Lakers were awful. And Kobe made a couple of big shots down the stretch to keep it interesting and keep it a game. And it was like, all right, well, yeah, that's still kind of Kobe. It's not late 90s or mid-2000s Kobe, but that's still a guy that's going to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame and one of the all-time greats. And I'm glad that I can at least say that I saw him.
Yeah, so that's what are you placing the value on? Because it wasn't the Stones in their prime, but you can't see the Stones in their prime.
Right, yeah,
we haven't invented time travel.
Right, not yet at least anyway. We're still working on that. No, I think that's just kind of the way it is. Like knowing what you're getting into. That it's don't expect five-star, like greatest show of your life. Expect the experience of saying, hey, yeah, we saw the stinking Rolling Stones in 2019. We saw them kick off their tour is what you were getting.
Yeah, and see Mick after heart surgery. And then it was sentimental, man. Like, honestly, like it was cool for my parents to both experience it, and they hadn't been to a Stones concert together in 20 plus years. Because my dad took me in the 90s. We just had two tickets, and then I took him in Kansas City.
Did
in
that do much? Like, I know you're very much like me when it comes to music. Did that do much for you? Were you able to understand the prominence or the importance of the Stones?
Well, I feel like that's maybe the only band that I've understood it because of just it mattering a lot to my parents and my dad. And when they had their pop-up exhibit over at Navy Pier, I took him last summer and just walked around like a little Stones pop-up museum and so learned a little bit more about the history. But no, the best part about it for me by far was just how much fun my parents had. Like, you guys, you know, joke about like Big Game Tom and how privileged my childhood was and the games I got to go to and the things I got to see with my parents. And like, it was an absolutely amazing thing. And I'll never repay that. Like, the games that they took me to, private school education for college, right? Like, you know, had a great life. We'll never be able to pay it back. That's not how it works. Hopefully you don't keep score, Mom and Dad. And like, if there's like a secret bill somewhere of what I owe them, I am screwed with the modern salaries of radio. But just like being able to pay it back a little bit in terms of memories. You know, they both flew into Kansas City in 2014, took them to game one of the World Series, took them to a game took them to a Stones concert in 2015, took my dad to a Cubs World Series game in 2016, then took him to the Stones this weekend. Like, it's been fun to be able to, the gifts are fewer but bigger and more about like experiences. Like, I'm going to buy 4 Stones tickets and we're going to go as 2 couples, me, my wife, Mom and Dad, and go. And so hopefully those are memories that'll last a lifetime.
Well, I'm sure that they will. Yeah. And I'm sure they appreciate that. And it's awesome that you get to do that.
But so I don't really care that, you know,
it wasn't the, oh my God, it didn't sound like 1981 Mick Jagger or Keith Richards. It didn't get delivered quite the same way.
Exactly.
You're more than fine with it.
Like,
because, yeah,
the 60,000 people weren't quite as into "You Can't Always Get What You Want" and clap. Like, Mick is such an old school front man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, his big thing, he wants people to clap. Like, clap. It's hard to get 60,000 people in a stadium show when you're not streaming songs back to back to back to like
get
really,
a flow. Yeah.
Really tough to do. And so, you know, he's out there doing his overhead clapping thing and not everyone is in rhythm with Mick Jagger. And so you're like, oh, you know, he's still doing the same tricks that he was doing in 1975.
Well, it's also when you're playing in a stadium like that, your clap is going to sound different. Like, do it on one end zone, essentially, and on the other. Like, you're going to hear the clap at different times, and it's going to be kind of odd sounding or whatever else anyway.
It was.
Please clap.
Exactly. But no, visually, it was really cool.
Like, what was the stage? Was it one of those that, like, Justin Timberlake always does a thing where it, like, transports him from end to end to end? Did it kind of include everyone in the stadium? Was it all on one side?
No, it was in the – so the stage was in the north, like, goal line to 15-yard line, maybe. And so the tickets behind that, like, end zone seats to the north were empty. But then the field had, you know, pit on either side of the stage, and then the stage had like a narrow catwalk walkway thing with a small circle out by maybe the 30-yard line, 35-yard line, somewhere around there. And, you know, Mick would come down and would front up there, and then sometimes they, like, for one stretch of a couple songs,
would they have to wheel him back after he came out?
Like, well, they moved the drum kit down there, and I think there was a trap door in the stage, and it was a separate drum kit. I didn't really know how they transported it. I missed it. My head was in a good spot,
I'm sure.
But but yeah, you know, it was so. Yeah, they were catering to people around there and middle of the stadium. But then the whole thing was they had the screens behind them that went, you know, had to have been 100 feet high. And each guy had an ISO cam on him. And then the screen, it was live. It wasn't delayed. But like on Instagram, how you could put like a filter through things.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it'd be a black and white filter, or maybe it'd be a grainy filter, or maybe they'd have like hallucinogenic colors behind it, or like red flames of sympathy
for the
devil.
So you pay all the money to go see the Rolling Stones at Soldier Field, and you watch them through an Instagram filter on a 100-foot screen.
Yeah.
It's like going to a Dallas Cowboys game, and you can't help but watch the damn screen that's above you because it's so big and massive.
Yeah, and it's good for people that are far away, who can, so you could like feel like you're seeing them up close, right? And we were in the 200 level, the club section, like off to the right of the stage. We had great seats, but Dad still wanted to bring his binoculars to like lock in. I'm like,
awesome.
I'm like, who are you focusing on? He's like, I'm just going back and forth between Mick and Keith. I'm like, all right, man, enjoy yourself. Like, have a blast.
It probably speaks to where my musical taste or thoughts are on it, but if I brought binoculars to a Rolling Stones show, I would be crowd searching and I'd be watching the audience much more than I'd be watching the band.
Yeah.
Like, music's cool and all that, but the crowd at a Rolling Stones show, I'm sure was, it lived up to...
The people watching was good.
Yes.
Yeah, it was top flight people watching. It was a very hazy experience.
Oh my God, I'm sure.
At Soldier Field, so I can add Soldier Field and now Wrigley Field to my places all time, to my all-time list. So that was fun. And yeah, man, it was cool. Like, Spiegs always would talk about how, you know, the closest thing to time travel was music, and it could span and cross generations and all of that. And it was cool to see that with my dad, who is older, and then my mom's of a like max generation, and then me and my wife, obviously, in our age. And it was cool for everybody to hang out and have a good time. I'd go again tomorrow. I probably wouldn't pay for it, but like, you know, if tickets materialized out of thin air, like, it was absolutely enough of a good time and fun enough that I'd go out there and do it again.
Heck yeah, it's the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, like, you can love music, you cannot really have that great a taste in it. That's a cultural phenomenon that's lasted and withstood the test of time and still kicking strong, still going at it.
And frankly, way more enjoyable than the Cubs that I took in over the weekend.
Oh my God. Oh boy.
What was, if you were going to say, like, top takeaway from the Cubs this week, because Javi saved it in terms of just casual, like, if you're going to do it in a micro, the weekend of the series, Javi saved the whole thing with that moment. That's the moment you'll remember from the series, other than the fight in the clubhouse with the reporter on the Mets side in terms of dysfunction. So Javi's moment was what you'll remember, but any bigger takeaways that you had?
I thought it was a huge week for Jose Quintana because of what happened on Tuesday night specifically. And immediately, I mean, after Eloy hits the home run on Tuesday, immediately the thought is, oh my God, the Cubs gave him up to get Quintana. Quintana hasn't delivered. And I just thought, you can't take it one start and just sink in only on that. But it was a chance for Quintana to be, okay, yeah, I've heard all week that this was a ripoff. The Cubs gave up these prospects, Dylan Cease included, to get me, and I've been a disappointment. And I have a chance to go out here against a pretty poor offense outside of a name or two and the Mets and take care of business on my home field and maybe silence a couple of the critics up. And instead, gives up 3 home runs, gets torched, gives up, what, 9 runs, 8 of them were earned,
looks
out of place the entire game,
exactly.
The 3 2/3 or whatever he lasted in it, looked disastrous. That was my biggest takeaway, and I hate to go to the negative side of it, but you're counting on him to not just eat innings, you're counting on him to be getting important outs when things start to really matter, not just in a race for the playoff spot right now, but if you're going to win and win in October specifically, he's going to have to be a guy that gets a lot of outs for you, and it's not a guy that I trust right now.
Right, because you have 2 35-year-olds in Lester and Hamels. You've got Darvish, who no one can trust.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Hendricks, who's injured, and you've got Alzolay, who's just a kid with no experience. So in theory, when you have an injury to Hendricks and you've got other guys sputtering, the next guy who's the closest to his athletic prime is Quintana. You want to feel like you can rely on him, and no one's going to feel very comfortable pitching that guy in a huge must-win type of playoff game. I don't know how you could.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way that you can. And then you look at just kind of like, it's not just yesterday or Saturday either in Quintana's case. I mean, you look at what he's done the last really month and a half, 2 months in this run with the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs haven't won one of his starts since May 21st. That's the last time that they're able to go out and get a win. And I know pitchers' wins are devalued now and any of that. But he hasn't been good outside of a start against Colorado at the start of June. That's like his one good start, really, in that whole month, month and a half window. And I think that that's what screams at me from the weekend is this guy has to get it right, because right now you have a pitching staff that Cole Hamels, you feel good, not great about. You have John Lester, who's all right. He's the vet that reteaches himself and reinvents things start to start and year to year, and he figures it out eventually, but he's going through one of those rough patches. Like you said, the Hendricks injury, I think, is incredibly huge, incredibly significant with this team. And it's just a starting staff that you probably thought you had more faith in and more confidence in entering this year, and it hasn't shown that way. And I think Quintana is a massive piece of that.
He's the biggest piece of it from the Cubs standpoint, and I think that we'd be kidding ourselves if there isn't a huge Sox factor in how it hurts, how we analyze it. Oh. I want to get into it coming up because that's a trade that we're going to analyze for a decade in this town, because it's what we knew about Quintana when we watched him. It's about what the Cubs gave up for him. It's about how Cease and Eloy will perform going forward. It's about what the Cubs were able to do with the money that they saved. Like, there are so many factors that go into evaluating the value of it from the Cubs side. Like, it's fairly easy from the Sox side. Are Eloy and Cease good? Right? Like it's,
heck, I mean, even if that's what you give up, and seeing in Quintana, and not saying Quintana would have been this with the Sox, maybe playing in lesser games or less meaningful games. Maybe he's a pressure guy. I really don't know that. And maybe his numbers wouldn't have been this bad with the White Sox. But even if just one of those guys hits, even if just Eloy hits, or just Cease ends up being a star in this, it feels like right now that that's one you're going to look back on for the 8 years that Eloy is here, and you just, oh, man, that's what you gave up to get. Oh,
yeah, you're gonna be reminded of it for a while, and you felt like, what did I miss? Because it's not like we weren't watching him when he was with the White Sox. Mm-hmm. We know he's better than this, and it feels like he should be better coming to the Cubs, pitching in bigger games with a better defense than he had in the easier offensive league, and in fact, it's went the other way. So it's tough to explain why it's gone this way. So there's a lot of ramifications and factors in there that both sides of town can weigh in on. We'll do that coming up. Len Casper also joins us at 3 o'clock. It's Mac and Parkins with Shep in on the Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here's the 3-1. Swinging a high fly ball deep left field. Back goes Schwarber to the left field fence. At the fence, that's a home run. Todd Frazier, a towering two-run homer to left. And the Mets now have a commanding 5-0 lead.
Quintana, you're welcome.
I was waiting for it's all Don Cooper texts. Even though Lucas Giolito goes back and works with his high school coach, it's Don Cooper. That's the reason that Quintana's struggling since he's been a Cub.
Yeah, it's got to be. Even though Quintana was struggling in 2017 with the White Sox before he was traded, it's got to be all Don Cooper, right?
And he was better with the Cubs when he got here. I honestly think that that's the toughest part of it from the Cubs side, for me anyway, is I don't have a great explanation as to why Quintana is worse with the Cubs than the Sox.
I wish I had a reason. Like, I don't. He's not the same guy. Like, he was always, as a White Sox pitcher, it was, if he was on a team that didn't have Chris Sale on it, he'd be an ace, and he'd be in a discussion of one of the best pitchers in the American League. He's underappreciated because the team's bad, and they refuse to score runs for him every time he goes out and starts. And he gets to the Cubs, where he gets help offensively, and the guy has just been, I mean, it's a couple of good starts against the Brewers. A good start, was it against the Dodgers a week ago, that he goes 5 innings? Like, that qualifies as a good start, I guess, but keeps the Cubs in a close game on Sunday Night Baseball. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, he's okay. He's what you gave up two top-tier prospects for, and more names on that list as well that you gave up for. It's just, it's rough.
Well, I heard Lawrence talking about it. He was like, you know, it's interesting the criticism that Quintana gets compared to Lester when Lester makes three times as much money. Lester has already won a World Series for you. He's been great in the postseason. He has a 3.4 ERA cumulatively since coming over to the Cubs. So Lester has been much better than Quintana has been, again, by almost a full run in terms of ERA. And it can't just be evaluated by money, right? For Lester, it costs just money. For Quintana, it's money and prospects. So part of the equation for Quintana will always be how Eloy and Cease and the other prospects perform for the White Sox, because that's what you gave up. Now, that doesn't mean that the Cubs still cannot be viewed as winners or at least neutral in this trade. Quintana just has to have big playoff performances in seasons that matter.
Yeah, he has to do something. Like, he has to be a reason that you win a National League pennant, a reason that you win a World Series.
Correct.
Like, he can't just be fourth starter guy that takes the ball and you lose each of his playoff starts. No.
It's why you can never be upset, in my opinion, justifiably, about Gleyber Torres.
Like, right, you won the World Series.
You won the World Series. Same thing with Jason Hayward's contract.
Mm-hmm.
You won the World Series. Quintana didn't win one with you.
Well, you could have won a World Series if Jason Hayward wasn't a Cub, though. Someone would have stepped up. Grandpa Rossi or somebody would have stepped up and delivered the speech.
Probably.
That was so instrumental in turning things around that fateful November night.
Probably, but when you hang a banner and you end a 108-year drought, I'm fine playing the results.
Like, I get it, but that Jason Hayward contract's still a disaster.
It's terrible. It's a terrible contract. I'm with you, and it might have cost them a shot at Bryce Harper. Like, I am with you, but I'm cool playing the results on everything that erased that 108-year drought. If you're here now and you weren't part of that team that ended the 108-year drought, the new standard of excellence for Cubs baseball is winning a National League, winning a World Series. And so the guys who haven't contributed to that, in my mind anyway, the jury is still out on them.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think that, like, Lester is also 35 years old. Jose Quintana's 30. You expected, when Lester signed his deal, you knew, or you said to yourself, oh, wow, how's he going to hold up by the back end of that thing, the last couple of years of it? And for the most part, yes, his last month has not been good. But for the most part, he has not just lived up to that. He's been more than worth it, despite getting 34, 35 years old. Like, he's played to what he's earned. Jose Quintana, it's a team-friendly deal. That's great, and it allowed the Cubs flexibility and spending elsewhere. Well, Quintana hasn't been right, and what they had to, or what they were able to spend because of the Quintana money, hasn't been right either.
Yeah, Lester is one of the five greatest free agent signings in Chicago sports history.
I mean, I would...
It's not even close comparing it to the Quintana trade. It's not even close.
Off the top of my head, it's Marian Hossa and it's him, right?
Right.
Like, who else has been that impactful or that huge in a turnaround?
I'm with you. I'm just being conservative.
Sure.
Like, I'm just to be conservative with it, to me, comparing those two, it's not even close. We have some callers who want to get in a second. We're monitoring the press conference over at the Advocate Center for the Bulls. Jim Boylan speaking to the media, first time since the contract extension that he agreed upon. Apparently, he says that... they entered negotiations 2 weeks after the season ended, April 24th, and the negotiations wrapped up April 25th. That is the product of not having other bidders for your services. like, I don't need to shop this around to see if I can do better, because I know that I can't.
Yeah, and I wonder how those negotiations, the part I'd love to hear is what John Paxson, Gar Forman, and company delivered of, all right, and we're going to hire other assistants that we trust a lot more than you, because we don't really know what you have in you.
Yeah, and by the way, I said if you didn't want him to be a lame duck, a short extension was reasonable once you made the determination that you weren't going to be a player in free agency this year. Like, I don't think it's an egregious decision to keep boiling around and try to have some continuity for Lowry and Wendell and the young Bulls right now so that they don't have three coaches in 3 years. Like, I don't think it's an egregious mistake that's going to completely slow their development. But I don't know that I want to also praise them for getting this negotiation done so quickly and easily. This wasn't tough. He was making an assistant coach's salary. He's now a low-paid NBA head coach. No one else was bidding for his services. This was fairly easy to get done.
Yeah, I'm more curious how the first-round pick and Coby White fits into this offense. In Jim Boylan's style last year, it was like 1980s and 90s basketball of, all right, get the low man down low and and a bunch of twos and don't worry about threes and your pacing, slow it down more. Like, everything I saw from North Carolina last year with Coby White was when he was at his best, they were flying up and down the court. And in order for him to succeed, I would assume that's your best plan of operation. And it just doesn't fit what Boylan does either. So
I've seen this criticism going around Bulls Twitter and Bulls writers saying, I wonder if they're going to... They're not that dumb. Like you know me, right. Man. I am cynical.
I get it.
I am glass half empty, unfortunately, when it comes to the Bulls. There's no way you draft Coby White and then try to play like the slowest pace in the NBA and force him into
There's
a half court.
There's no way you do, but you also don't hire Fred Hoiberg and get a bunch of old guys to slow down an offense either.
Yeah, touche. Like, I have no rebuttal for that.
There's precedent of doing this. I mean, I guess the polar opposite thing, but yes.
But in fairness, the Rondo and Wade committals were short term, and Coby White is the seventh overall pick in the draft. So, right,
theoretically, going to be at least 5-6 years.
Yeah, one is more long term foundational, and the other was a band aid. Your point is well taken. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'm not worried about it at all.
Right, I got this young up and down coach. We're going to fly up and down the court, and we're going to sign Dwayne Wade that doesn't have any knees left, and Rondo who can barely move. And
I would love to get Fred Hoiberg with some truth serum and ask him what he thinks about this roster and if he would have liked to coach it with his system.
Poor Fred, man.
Right?
Poor Fred.
It's like, I'm in Nebraska.
I hope Lincoln, Nebraska's treating him well. He didn't get treated well here.
I mean, I know the money is. Texter writes in, did you nitwits already forget about Khalil Mack? Nitwits is valid, sir, but no, Khalil Mack hasn't won anything yet.
Well, he's also a trade.
Oh, yeah, there is that,
right?
Too.
We said free agent.
Yeah.
So, yes, nitwit Texter. Mm-hmm. We did not forget about Khalil Mack because he agreed to an extension. That's great. It was a trade that got him here.
Mike in
Barrington. So the Bears didn't have a first-round pick there.
Mike in Barrington, you're on the score. What up, Mike?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Taking it back to Jose Quintana, personally, if I've already closed the book on this, I think the Cubs lost the trade. I'm looking to the future. I think he has two option years, if I'm not mistaken. And so my question is, if you're the Cubs brass in the front office, do you exercise those options?
Yes.
I might be more interested in seeing Tyler Chatwood slot back into the rotation than seeing more Jose Quintana.
No. It's just one team option. It's a 2020 team option, Mike, and it's so cheap that Jose Quintana, even though he's been disappointing for what they wanted him to be, he still is providing value compared to his contract.
Yeah,
it's not close.
It's $11.5 million team option for next year. And again, the value in Jose Quintana is always not making much money, but you thought you were getting a prime pitcher at that kind of money. He's well worth the $11.5 million that he's going to be given next year when the Cubs pick up his team option. Because who are you replacing him with? You're going to go test free agency and just fill it that way? Sure as heck have had trouble developing starting pitching prospects in this farm system. That's the one kind of knock on this organization that has been. It's you don't have your homegrown starting pitching with any regularity, with any consistency or success here so far. So you're not just going to replace him with that. That's a no-brainer 100 times out of 100.
Ray in Orland Park wants to talk Q. What's up, Ray?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Yeah, I feel like the Jose Quintana trade is being over-evaluated here in the sense that we already forgot that Quintana's pitched two fairly okay seasons for the Cubs. And if you remember that Baltimore game that he started when they acquired him, he had a great start and that kind of turned things around for the team. And I feel like, you're looking at Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease like they're all-stars already. I mean, that could happen, but it hasn't happened yet. This isn't Scott Feldman for Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop, where it's obviously, the Cubs fleeced the Orioles. The Cubs got value here. He helped them make the NLCS. I know he didn't pitch well in the playoffs, but they made the NLCS after they acquired him and jumped him over the hump. And
well, he pitched well in Game 3 of the Nationals series. His first playoff game with the Cubs was actually very good. I want to say he went like 6 innings and gave up no runs, had 7 strikeouts.
Yeah, and it was the one run he allowed was when Schwarber had the clown shoes on.
You're right.
But yeah, I think that's the one run that he allowed, and he ended up beating Max Scherzer that day.
Yeah, but and then in the NLCS, he got he got shelled.
Yeah. Well, pretty much everyone did, because what they were out, all the excuses came out for the NLCS. Oh, the plane had to take an emergency landing, and oh, they were partying all night in Washington.
They
and
went five.
Was tired,
Shep, I don't think he beat Scherzer that day. Wasn't that the respect me game? I think he maybe got no decision because of that error.
The Cubs
I remember
beat
being
Scherzer,
very mad
I guess,
at,
that day.
I remember being very mad at Kyle Schwarber that day for costing my guy Q a victory.
How do you take this in, Tanny, as someone who's a huge Q fan and watched him for all those years?
I don't know. I think it's just a lot of overreacting. I mean, I thought he would pitch better being in the inferior league, the National League, but that's kind of tilted the past year and a half, especially with all the free agents going to the National League now. But, you know, he certainly hasn't lived up to expectations, and I think we're all comfortable saying, okay, this guy, Quintana, is a solid two, at the very worst, three in the American League. He's going to do well going forward, and he just hasn't lived up to it. But again, I have a lot of Cub fan friends who would talk to me about this all the time, about this trade. You have to put everything in context. I think still it's the right move if you had to go back and make it again, because I don't know where Eloy is going to play because how much they love Schwarber. I don't think there's a spot for him and Cease. Are you going to want to wait to develop a guy like that? So, you know, I still think it's a good trade. You know, you can't look at these things, you know, like how we're looking at them now. I think everyone wishes he would pitch better, and I think he's capable of pitching better. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not a number one starter. This guy is coming over to a new league, and he's going to have some inconsistencies. So, you know.
Yeah, but you're 2 years into it now. I mean, if you're looking at it and you're evaluating it on half of a season or whatever, okay, there's a change of the league and whatnot. I mean, the fact is, the guy's gone from being maybe not an ace, but on that conversation, on the cusp of being considered an ace by many, many baseball people, to being he'll start you 25, 30 games a year and occasionally get into the sixth inning or maybe into the seventh. But
at the end of the day, I think that's what this argument's all about. He's not an ace. And I think, you know, the expectations are kind of a little bit too high for him for a guy that's not an ace. Like, they gave up a lot to get a guy that was just a middle of the rotation guy at the end of the day. I don't think anyone predicted he would dominate the National League. He's not a guy that's going to miss a ton of bats, mm-hmm. and especially with the jump in offense that we've seen. I think he's just been a victim of a lot of those circumstances. So,
there was a piece of news that came up from the Cubs over the weekend that had me thinking that a reinforcement might not be on the way. We'll get into that. Len Casper joins us at 3:00. Shep in for Mac. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's LYST. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I don't know if you guys have been around Tito or asked him questions, but he's the best there is at, you know, knowing what the media needs. And he respects y'all's job and that y'all are trying to do your job every single day. And he's relaxed and gives you guys the answers, and I will do the same thing.
That was Mickey Callaway at his introductory press conference. A few things have changed once you become the manager of the Mets in dealing with the New York media, and you're losing a bunch of games and getting questioned. He went at Tim Healy. Tim Healy said, "See you tomorrow, Mickey," after questioning him pretty consistently, like the New York media does, over his bullpen use in the game yesterday. He snapped back at him, tried to get him thrown out of the clubhouse. Then Jason Vargas stared Healy down, the reporter from Newsday. Healy asked him if he wanted to say anything to him, and Vargas moved in his direction. Some described it a charge. Healy said that was overstating it, but Syndergaard and others needed to get in between the pitcher and the reporter. He's, of course, on the cover of all the New York newspapers. It's the clown show, and the Mets under the Wilpon family have had dysfunction after dysfunction after dysfunction without much winning. So when you get a story like this, it's like throwing red meat to a dog.
Oh, God, yeah. Especially the New York papers and all that, New York radio stations. But just as a Chicago fan and a Cubs fan that I am, I can just say that I kind of, from afar, yeah, it happened here and whatever, and got the Chicago connection with that. I'm happy as hell it's happened in the New York Mets. For what you did in 2015 in the NLCS, I have not forgotten, my friend.
There you
Your
go.
Your rent is due, and I'm here to laugh at you the entire way through this entire process of the Mets being, yep, if this pitching can put it together, they're going to be the team, and they're going to be a force in the East that's not getting discussed enough, and this, that, and the other. And you get to June 23rd yesterday, and you have a manager and you have a starting pitcher that are trying to attack the media physically. It could not be scripted better than this.
Yeah, it is nice. And I will admit, I'll raise my hand and say I was scared of the Mets in 15.
I was scared of them in 16. I was so happy when the Giants won that play-in game.
Yeah.
I didn't want to see Syndergaard and company again.
Harvey, Syndergaard, DeGrom. Like, I was just not interested in facing that team year in and year out. They were terrifying. But I'm actually mildly surprised there isn't a suspension announced yet. But not for Mickey Callaway, for Jason Vargas. You can't have it.
You can't be trying to physically intimidate a reporter.
Can't
it's one thing to like have a verbal altercation and there's yelling and whatever goes back and forth. Okay, sure. But if you try to physically intimidate a guy, like, yes, there should be reprimanded.
Yeah. And listen, I don't think this is the biggest deal in the world. I think it's more funny. Like, I'm here for dysfunction and chaos and, you know, spicing up the middle of a baseball season. So
yeah.
I'm here for all that. But
see you tomorrow, Mickey.
Yeah, but
it's awesome that that's what set him off.
It's
that's
hilarious.
Where the teetering point was. See you tomorrow, Mickey.
Yeah, it's amazing. But like Mickey Callaway, okay, he's mad. He knows that he made a mistake with his bullpen. He got questioned. He's probably getting fired at the end of the year. So he snaps and he curses at a reporter in front of a bunch of other reporters. Bad form shouldn't do it. Maybe a little bit of a slap on the wrist. You got to go see the boss. You got to apologize to a reporter with your tail between your legs. You don't feel good about it. But, yo, Jason Vargas can't be saying, I will knock you the F out, bro. like that just, you can't allow that to happen.
What are you possibly thinking? Like, oh, my God.
You're
frustrated because your team blew a game that they were leading in the eighth inning. Your under 500 team lost a game. I get it. You're competitive. But you're going to stand up for our manager. I'm going to go fight the beat reporter that said something, that he said he'd see him tomorrow. Like, okay.
Yeah.
That's Jason Vargas, team leader, put the C on his chest after that one.
I'm a sucker for a good media athlete or media coach confrontation, too.
Yes, absolutely.
They're the best.
Yes.
Whether they're mad at Steve Stone and Chip Carey up in the booth. Whether it's Jim Everett going across the table at Jim Rome, Chris
yeah.
Everett, yeah, they're all great. They're all funny because it just shows that in the moment, taking sports just way, way too seriously. And I know it's their livelihood, and I know Mickey Callaway is on the hot seat, and so it is a matter of maybe needing to move your family and losing income. And I'm not saying it's not serious, but Jason Vargas with a guaranteed contract threatening to fight a beat writer for Newsday is just, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's perfect. I don't know if sports needs more of it necessarily. But,
there's
many things in the world that we can worry more about and focus our concerns on of fixing instead of the Mets and how they handle and treat the media and their beat reporters.
Yeah, it's not that sports needs more of it. It's just I don't necessarily want there to be less of it.
Yeah.
I enjoy these little moments.
All right, so Bob Knight, notorious ass bag, right?
Yeah.
But Bob Knight was also incredibly entertaining for our childhood when he'd get asked any kind of guided question or anything, and he'd blow up and go on his rant and be like, okay, yeah, what a jerk, man. I'd be so scared to ask that guy a question. But when you go down the YouTube wormhole of his videos and dealing with the media, I can separate the being a jerk and still being entertaining at the same time.
Yeah, but Bob Knight,
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't entertained by it.
Yeah, but Bob Knight had that extra thing where he didn't threaten to fight you. Like, he actually had the physical abuse part of it.
Yeah, well, it's just his players. That wasn't the media, so everything's okay, right?
Okay, yeah, I guess that does make me feel safer as a member of the media.
Yeah, right.
Len Casper will join us. They have we'll talk about the good and bad from the Mets series, but they have a hell of a series coming up, four games against the Braves. The pitching matchups are just ridiculous. The Braves have been hot. We'll have Len Casper on to talk about it all next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.